Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is indeed time for Movies and Booze. Linda Coogan, Brian Lloyd and Fionnuala Jones. Joins. I'm going to call you Fionnuala Jones now.
I can call worse.
Yeah. Anyway, they're all with us. Good afternoon to you all.
Hi, guys.
Brian, the two movies are The Invite. Uh-huh. That's kind of more straightforward. But sure. Nirvana, the band, the movie, the show. Has it anything to do with Nirvana?
It would take a long time to explain. And it's Nirvana with an extra N.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie. Nirvana, the band, the show was a Canadian cult comedy TV show that ran from like 2008, 2009. It is impossible to get it online. It's not on any of the streamers. It is an honest to goodness cult comedy series. It has the people that know it love it.
Yeah.
I know it. I love it. The movie now has had a very circuitous path to the cinema. They filmed this. They filmed it over 200 days. They had to invoke fair use policies to get certain parts of the movie out into a cinema.
Does it have anything to do with Nirvana, Brian?
No, it doesn't. No, sorry, to answer your question, it does not.
Yeah, right, okay, we took the scene through to...
sorry.
But you kind of like it, and
love
the
it.
Other one, The Invite, was...
cracking.
Cracking as well.
Loved it.
Fantastic. And today, Linda, it's... I see a red wine and something else.
You do,
I don't
indeed.
Know what the something
it's
else
called
is.
A welcome drink.
Yeah, okay.
Ooh, yeah. So, yeah, that's what we're calling this, because when I say what it is, some people are like, oh, no, I don't want to try that. It's actually a dry white port and tonic.
Okay.
So port, you think of your granny. You know, you think of Christmas, you think of all those things. But this is a style that's been out for so long. I look back at my photographs. I was in Porto 8 years ago singing and dancing.
Porto was lovely, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I've been there.
And that's when I had this first out there sitting in the sun, and it's perfect for this type of beer.
A port and tonic.
Port and tonic. You can mix it up. You could do a sangria. You could do all sorts of stuff. I have just fresh lemon and mint today from my garden. But you can do rosemary and orange. You can do all sorts. It's amazing.
This tonic water is very refreshing,
I know,
I have to say.
And that's the Fever Tree tonic. You can use whatever you want, but it's just really fresh, really clean.
Oh, it is, yeah.
I know. Mm. And when you say port, people go, you know, they're afraid of it because it's a fortified wine. They do think it are granny, same as sherry. Mm. And I tell you now, cocktails, spritzers, everything. Different to Aperol. It has that bitter kind of orchid kind of fruits going on, but it's so delicious.
And you grow mint in your back garden?
Yeah, well, my son does. He grows everything. Okay. He's amazing, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, there you are.
That's
very easy
handy to
grow,
have a son that does that, I must say.
A sip of this, actually.
I'll
be able to drive, yeah.
We're getting a TV show about the toxic mom friend group drama essay by Ashley Tisdale. Oh, my God, that's
sentences,
a long one. Yeah.
Sentences we should not read. Sentences I should never have had to read, and yet here we are. So, for people that are unfamiliar with this situation, back in January, Ashley Tisdale wrote this very viral essay for The Cut that was called Breaking Up My Toxic Mom Group. If you don't know who Ashley Tisdale is, she was Sharpay in High School Musical. Iconic role. And she wrote this about how basically she made friends with other celebrity moms and kind of gradually found herself ostracized by the group and left out, and they basically just started hanging out without her, and etc, etc. This went super viral because obviously she is very famous. It was very easy to piece together who the other moms in the group were through social media sleuthing and stuff like that. Some of the alleged moms had kind of come out and made kind of semi-statements about it. Like it was inferred that Hilary Duff was part of the group, Mandy Moore, Meghan Trainor. Hilary Duff's husband, Matthew Cuomo, came out with his own like satirical, so he did like a fake like a photo shoot that Ashley had done with The Cut. He basically satirised that with a photo of himself with a different headline that said, when you're the most self-obsessed, tone-deaf person on earth, other moms tend to shift focus to their actual toddlers. So this was like huge internet fodder for weeks and weeks and weeks. She is coming out the other end of it now, the winner potentially, because this TV show is now being worked out around this essay called Toxic Moms. She's working on it with Ali Wong, who
people will know probably most recently from Beef and Sabrina Jalisse. I think it's at Netflix for development. This might not go anywhere, but I kind of doubt it won't because it is just so buzzy. Like if you Google Toxic Moms, the follow-up word that Google will put in for you is Ashley Tisdale. This is now she's kind of synonymous with now, which is, I mean...
But is there any possibility Ashley Tisdale is just a dose?
That seems to be what Matthew Cuomo is inferring. And again, like the rest of them have kind of come out. Like Meghan Trainor came out and gave kind of a semi-statement about it, that it was like kind of unfortunate that it had happened and stuff like that. And I know some other people have been critical of the essay. I mean, I don't know. Like the log line of this does seem kind of interesting. It's they're looking at it more kind of a comedy perspective. The sleep-deprived new mom is drawn into a clique of cool, wealthy mothers when the group reveals its darker side. The series asks, in the isolation of motherhood, how far would you go to taste community? So, like, there's something there. It's just crazy that it's come from kind of a nothing burger of an essay that was just kind of like celebrity gossip tidbit, you know, that way.
I know, but you could see how it's a good idea, even if it's come from that specific set of circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure there are like real life experiences of, you know, you think someone's your friend and you think, oh, it's this thing that connects us both, like motherhood, and we have all the same experiences. But like, just because two people are moms doesn't mean they would necessarily be friends outside of that one thing that they share, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, and that can often go wrong.
Yeah,
if little
exactly.
Johnny isn't nice to little Mary or vice versa. Yeah. Right, so this was this a documentary about Sam Altman that was being made?
So this was a film from Luca Guadagnino. This was coming up about the OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, and it was originally at Amazon Studios, Amazon MGM Studios. They were working on it. Luca Guadagnino has nearly finished it, and a couple of weeks ago it was announced that Amazon were actually dropping the film, right? And there were eyebrows raised over this because there was news that coincided with this, that Amazon was investing $50 billion in OpenAI through this like multi-year strategic partnership, they're calling it. So people were a bit like, that's interesting, because our understanding of the Luca Guadagnino film is that it's not necessarily like a...
It's not positive spin.
Like, oh, look at plucky old Sam, like beating the odds in his great tech company, etc., etc. Like, it's Social Network-esque, right? And Andrew Garfield is supposed to be staring at him, etc., etc. So this obviously came out and people are a bit like, this is incredible. You know, you've Bezos and co. like wielding all this power and this is really bad. Like, this sets a really bad precedent. It was shopped around. I think there was a couple of studios that said, they were talking to The Hollywood Reporter, that said they were reluctant to pick up the film for a variety of reasons, including political concerns, but now Neon are going to take it. So apparently it's between Neon and Mubi. Neon has it and it will be coming out. I think they are still working on it. I think it is almost done. I would imagine maybe next year, the year after, depending on how long it takes. And it's looking at how Altman... it's looking at the kind of period in 2023 where he was fired and then rehired and like kind of what went on there. As I mentioned, Andrew Garfield is playing Sam Altman, but we also have Ike Barinholtz is playing Elon Musk, which I'm really
that would be,
intrigued
be a great
see.
Choice for that.
I hadn't heard that casting. I think it sounds really good. Monica Barbaro as well. She's playing Chief Technology Officer Mira Moradi. One to watch out for, I would say. Yeah, just interesting that we can just you know, with this kind of the tech companies and the studios getting more and more intertwined and men getting richer and richer and richer, that we can just go, let's not make that film because it kind of makes my friend look a bit bad. And that would make him so sad. Poor Sam.
Well, might it run into distribution problems though later
on? No, Neon have got it now, so they'll distribute it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, well...
we will see this film, 100%.
See this film.
Yeah.
Will we see the version of it that was intended, though?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Well, yeah, because Luca Guadagnino's come out and said, like, I'm heavily paraphrasing here, but just how he's, like, he's keen for people to see this and, like, this kind of message that he has for it, and he's not put off by all of this going on.
Interesting. Okay, Linda. What are we going to talk about first?
So, Newport Dry White Port. So this, as I said, it's summer in a glass. It's just something that's just that little bit different. And the Jura Valley, again, you just think of hot, that's red, really nice, sweet wines. And this is the opposite. Like, do you know what I mean? You can totally picture yourself, instead of gin and tonic, it's Portugal's version of a gin and tonic. You can add, to make your little sangria, add in your ice. You can add a sparkling. You can do all sorts. It's just so much fun. But there's it's actually quite deep in colour. It's actually amber in colour. It's not white. Because of the aging of it. But when you can get 10-year-old versions, you get 20-year-old versions, but this is just aged for a couple of years in oak barrels. So it gets that kind of interesting, complex colour going on with it. But then it's just so delicious. But people are really put off by port and sherry. It just doesn't do it for them when they hear those words. They're just like, no. So fortified just means that it's higher in alcohol because they have to add grape spirit to it. And then it's aged in big oak vats for a period of time. But what do you think? Like, you like it? Do you?
Very nice.
No, it's really delicious. Really nice. Yeah. But the port itself, is that a very porty port, if you know what
so
I mean?
It's a dry port. So yeah. People think, like, if I gave it to you straight, you'd be like, oh my God, you're not supposed to drink it like that. You know, not really neat. Whereas a tawny port is made differently to, this is made with white grapes. The tawny port is made with red grapes and it has that nutty, oxidized note. Savory. It's amazing. I'm definitely doing one at Christmas because it's so good. But this is a fresher style, trying to compete with the likes of gin and tonic, other cocktails that are much more approachable, trying to hit a younger market. And I think it really works. But it's, can you imagine this with your lovely little nibbles and just gorgeous little almonds, your little tapas? It's just so, so good. But, you know, Brian, you've been to
Porto. Yeah, I've been to Porto. It's lovely, yeah.
It's so good. It's just a cobblestone place that is just amazing to visit.
Great food.
I know.
Great food.
So good.
Really, really good food, yeah.
So, yeah, you need to orchid kind of fruits, this on the nose, and golden delicious apples and things like that. It's just so... but it smells. It does smell really strong there. But when you mix it with the tonic, it brings it down to like a 10% drink, which is really, really summertime, lunchtime vibes, and that.
Is it just a flavor, a flavor free tonic, or you know the way you get so many millions?
Yeah, you wouldn't use any elderflower or anything like that. I literally got the plain Indian, like simple tonic. Slimline's lovely. You don't need the tonic to do anything. Let the fruit of the drink come true. But when we did that, I did it Summer Sips recently for a company who were doing a wine tasting for summer vibes and all that, and we did it as a welcome drink. Did not tell them what it was. It was the star of the night. Do you know?
Yeah.
It's just, they're like, what was that? And it goes a long way. People don't realise that you're not supposed to keep port for too long. Most people have them. Sorry, everyone listening.
It's in cupboards for decades. Yeah,
exactly. Like 1 year to the next and the next. It's sitting in the back of the cupboard. It's dusted off for some auntie who wants a port. But this can keep in your fridge for about a month.
Okay.
So it goes along with
Okay, that's interesting.
And if you've got an aged one, because they've been exposed to oxygen, it'll last longer. And it's just, I know, obviously, I'm loving it here.
Spot on. That's lovely.
But you don't really necessarily need to get this particular brand. This is just one that is widely available. Neoport is available in 64 Wines, Clontarf Wines, The Drink Store, Mitchell & Son, Pinto Wines, McHugh's, loads of places. So that's one particular brand, but there's loads of others. Just ask for a dry white port.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can get them in half bottles, which is cool as well.
Yeah, beautiful. Which movie would you like to talk about first, Brian?
Let's go for the invite.
Let's go for the invite after this.
You were wild to come to the door.
No, they weren't.
And it sounded like you were arguing.
No filter.
No, I just want to be honest. We were at the door before we rang and we could hear you were fighting.
Oh, We were fighting.
Bit of a contentious environment in here, so I understand if that's repellent to you. No hard feelings, you know what I mean? Completely understand, you know?
We love a contentious environment. We love it.
Okay.
Well.
Really, it's fine.
You're in for a treat.
So, okay?
Yeah, great.
Do we have to take our shoes off?
Oh, God, no.
No
shoes. No, yeah.
Okay. Great.
Wait, hey,
look at
Joe.
This place.
Yeah, thank you.
Joe, be honest. Do you want us to take them off?
I don't give a f*** if you take your shoes off, personally.
There you go. That's the taking the shoes off issue again. That's the invite. That's in cinemas today. Is there a bit of an old-fashioned feel to this?
Very much so. Like, if this was released in the 70s, you'd be hearing, like, Alan Alda and Ellen Burstyn and, like, Jack Robbins and, like, I don't know, Sophia Loren or something like that, you know, that kind of way. Like, it is very much one of these kind of like lo-fi comedies wherein it's just set in one apartment block. That's the whole film. They're basically, it's a dinner party. Olivia Wilde and Seth Rogen are married in San Francisco. She decides to invite her upstairs neighbours, who are played by Edward Norton and Penelope Cruz. Olivia Wilde and Seth Rogen's characters are very kind of uptight. They're kind of sniping at each other. They're married long term. He was previously a musician, but now is a music professor. She was a photographer, and now she's a full-time mother. And, you know, like, you can feel the kind of, again, you can feel the contentious atmosphere between them before Ed Norton and Penelope Cruz arrive. And of course, when they come downstairs, sure enough, they're very European, they're very languid. You know, he was a firefighter, but now he's a conflict resolution specialist, and she's a sexologist. And it's this thing. Of course she is. Yeah. And then it's just that kind of tension of, like, people who are obviously very comfortable in their own skins versus people who are not comfortable in their own skills at all. And, like, the thing I would say, but it's kind of like, if you've ever seen About Schmidt, have you ever seen that with Jack Nicholson? Yeah. It's one of those films that, like, you will only really get it unless you're past a certain age and have certain life experiences. Case in point, there's a scene in this, like, at the start of the film, Seth Rogen's character is arguing with Olivia Wilde. She's like, I didn't know about we were having these people over. You didn't tell me about this. And she goes, I told you 2 weeks ago, you always do this. You forgot about this. And then later, no, but this is the thing. Then later on in the film, when the argument kind of ramps up to a certain point, Penelope Cruz goes to Olivia Wilde. She says, look, listen, this is fine. We don't have to do this. You only invited me today for this party, so don't worry about it. And Seth Rogen hears it, and he's all like, I knew it. And that's the thing, because that's happened to me. I've had that happen before, where my wife was like, I told you 2 weeks ago. And it's like, no, you didn't. And then I find out that she didn't tell me 2 weeks ago. She did this like a day ago. That's happened to me. So, like, that's what I'm saying to you. It's very...
So what? The neighbours are calling in next week.
Well, like, no, but just like...
Now, in fairness to your wife, she'd probably say that's because you don't remember anything anyway. It might as well have been 2 weeks ago.
Correct. I mean, yeah, that's exactly what she said.
I only know that defense because I've heard exactly the same thing.
Right, so you know what I mean? My point is, in, it's those kind of like very relatable, very close to the bone moments of humor that are in this film that, like, I mean, I remember at the press screening, like, people were cackling. And you have to remember, at press shows, they are usually very dry affairs, and people were, like, laughing their asses off at this. Olivia Wilde, like, I mean, you know, Don't Worry Darling was this, you know, big blockbuster, and there was loads of behind-the-scenes drama. And when you watched it, you could see that, like, she had an eye and had a talent or whatever, but, like, very much... it just kind of got away from her. I think her best quality, believe it or believe it not, is doing comedies, because the film she did before Don't Worry Darling was this thing called Booksmart, which was this great, funny, kind of super bad-esque comedy. And in this, it's more mature, but she really does have a natural instinct for, you know, pacing scenes, you know, that kind of way, like, where it just, like, lingers, like, 5 minutes longer, and you can just feel the awkwardness, and then you're, like, nervously laughing as you watch it and stuff like that. Ed Norton, great comedic talent. I mean, if you've seen Glass Onion, you know he can play that kind of, like, bozo.
But doesn't do it that often.
That often, but he's very, very good at it. Penelope Cruz was the surprising one. Now, I would admit, she is kind of leaning into what we think of Penelope Cruz, which is this, you know, very, you know, erudite, very beautiful, very sensual kind of, you know, and leans into that as a comedic thing. But Olivia Wilde, you know, really directs the hell out of this. It's a great script by Rashida Jones and Dylan McCormack. They've written romantic comedies in the past, and they have a really great voice or whatever. I love this. This is great. This is like a really, like, adult comedy in every sense of the word. And it's just, this is one of the best comedies I've seen this year. I really, really enjoyed this.
Okay, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
It probably won't do that well in the cinema.
Probably not. But I've had more people say, oh yeah, I've seen a trailer for that. That looks good. Yeah, is it good? You were saying that off air. Yeah. So, like, I would encourage people, this is worth going to see in a cinema. And if you like these kind of films, if this does well, they'll make more. So make the point of going to see it.
Yeah. Somebody wants to know, I have an unopened port in my cupboard since 1975. Should I open it?
Probably got blind if you drink that.
Yeah. Not only unless you've got a hazmat suit on, I would have thought.
Sorry, they have it since 1975?
Yes.
Or it has the year 1975 on it? Because that would make a big difference. So there is vintage port. So if this isn't a vintage port, this is just a dry white that's made to consume soon. A vintage port can last decades. So okay. It depends where they got it, how they stored it. And if it has a vintage on it, then it was made, like they only make one a decade of vintage ports when it's declared the best. So yes, if it's a vintage one, if he has it for, and it's a ruby from 1974, down the drain.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, they know immediately as soon as they
like
open it up.
Yeah, it'll have a year on it. Like, it's really obvious. Like, it's really, really obvious. It'll have a big blasting year on the front label, so you know it's a vintage port. If it doesn't, down the sink.
Yeah, okay. Because if you open it, you'll
have the crack. Do open it and taste it. It'll just be oxidized to pieces. Like, it'll just fall apart. But if it has a vintage on it, a year on it, you're laughing. It depends how it's being stored and all that. But like, open it up.
Yeah. It wouldn't be worth money or anything.
No, because unless you can see where it came from, how it's been stored, no one buy it. Like a good vintage port now might cost £100. Like.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. So I wonder how many people have written or try to write James Bond themes, and there's loads of them floating them out there.
Everyone would have to try doing that.
Even it's like a hypothetical, like, I don't know, creative exercise, I'm sure a load of them are doing it. None more so than Chris Martin.
Why him? Sorry.
Well, I mean, himself and the Coldplay lads have said they are James Bond obsessives. He had a couple of goals at it, and one of such goal is now up for auction. This 27-year-old demo that was reportedly lost, they found now up for auction, this lot by Wax Poets. This recording of The World Is Not Enough never was submitted, but it was written for it, for the 1999 Bond film with Pierce Brosnan, one of our own. Unheard, unreleased. There's a single recording of it on this cassette tape that's up for auction. And as I said, they describe themselves as like big fans, and he said it in interviews before. I think it was in 2021. He said they kept trying to write one for like 20 years, and they said they have Bond themes for about 5 movies, but also said they're not very good, if he was being honest.
Okay.
And also said that he's like, maybe it's because myself and Coldplay actually don't really align with like who James is as a geezer. Like, okay. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know?
You wouldn't see Chris Martin and James Bond out having drinks.
Which
you know,
like,
yeah.
At least you're honest.
Yeah.
You know?
At least he has that self awareness.
At least you have self awareness. Yeah. But anyway, if you want this flop James Bond theme for whatever reason, it's, as I said, it's up for auction. The auction's open for 16 days. It's current. On the time of writing these notes, it was at $1,500. So.
Is that all?
Yeah. I thought that as well.
I thought that'd be a bit more.
The royalties and all that you'd get. No,
you just get the tape. You don't get the royalties.
You just get the tape. It was never released. So it's just this tape. It's just him having a go, him going, the world is not enough, or whatever. I don't know. It's probably not that melody, but.
That's probably the gist of it. Yeah. Would he not own that, though, Chris Martin? Not the physical cassette, but the song.
That's a good question. That's what I would have thought, but I don't know, unless he's just offered it up to this auction for, you know, the goodwill or whatever. Yeah. Good gesture. Mm. Interesting.
Chris Brown says, I don't like guns. Yeah, you are the wrong guy.
Again,
to do this.
Also, I don't think you need to like guns to write a good James Bond theme.
No,
but
I would have thought not. No, not really.
But they definitely wouldn't have. I'm kind of intrigued to hear them, but I think ultimately the right call was made that they were never ever chosen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know? You'd think so.
Yeah.
But I'm dying to hear it now.
Yeah. I'm kind of.
I'd say it's probably terrible. You do realise that.
Because these were also, I think this particular one is like pre them, like even breaking out. Like, I think as part of the lot, there was a couple of other bits and bobs from like pre breakout Coldplay. So again, that's who wants it. Like, it's the Coldplay super fans or the kind of music archivists. So.
The best Bond theme that was never made for it is Pulp. Pulp did one for Tomorrow Never Dies.
Oh.
And it was on the expanded edition of This Is Hardcore, and the song was called Tomorrow Never Lies. They just literally changed it from Tomorrow Never Dies to Tomorrow Never Lies. But it's a great song, and it, like, you hear it, it's like, why did they not go for this? But then that was the year they had like Sheryl Crow, I think, and Katie Lang. And they're both great songs. But Pulp's one was like fantastic. They should have released it. They should have put it in there somewhere, and they didn't. Yeah. But yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like Alice Cooper did one. Alice Cooper did one for, I think it was The Man with the Golden Gun. And they, like, it was, he released it on one of his albums or whatever. And then that year, I think it was Lulu did that song, like, so. Mm. Yeah. There's a whole history of like
a compilation of failed Bond songs. Yeah.
Radiohead did one for Spectre as well. That was terrible.
Yes.
Well, Lana Del Rey.
Yeah. She did one for First Light
for the game that came out this year,
and it's great.
But then people are like, why didn't you keep this for when they book you, girl? But Lana so does her weird. Own thing.
Like,
so. They,
like again, this is what I'm saying to you. Like you hear that Pulp song, and I mean, it's so good. You can absolutely picture it playing over the credits. It's like, why did you go for not against Sheryl Crow, but like why did you go for that over this, like, you know? So
I wouldn't say Radiohead like guns either, somehow.
No,
or
can, well, no.
Does Sheryl Crow like guns?
I mean, do you have to like guns?
She might, yeah.
I don't know. It's
could you picture her shooting a gun? You probably could. Sheryl Crow would shoot her.
She got
the
cowboy
snake.
Kind of vibe. Yeah.
Right, so definitely Coldplay won't be writing a new theme tune for Mobland.
No.
Tom Hardy's going back to it.
Yeah, so there was a lot of reporting earlier this year that he was leaving ahead of the, or after the second season. So they've just completed work on the second season. And there were reports that he'd fallen out with the executive producer, Jez Butterworth, and the studios. As I said, yeah, apparently he was leaving. It seems like they have worked it out in the remix. They met up in London to hash out their issues, and he will be coming back. This is like, I'll be honest, I haven't watched it, but it's like a huge streaming juggernaut by all accounts, like hugely successful on Paramount Plus. So he's back if they get a third season, but it seems inevitable because it is so, so popular. Also stars our own Pierce Brosnan, Helen Mirren as this kind of crime family-ish. But again, I am also wondering, did they just meet up with Tom and go, will we add one more zero and then you'll come back and you'll maybe do it or whatever. But it also seemed like the Argy Bargy was kind of taking up all the narrative, as opposed to like, this show was good, you should watch it. You know, it kind of became bigger than the show. So
yeah. Okay. All right. Well, it's nice to people can kiss and make up. Yeah. Right. We are going to take a break. More movies and booze after this. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. Do you want to read out what Helen Mirren said about Tom Hardy there?
Yeah, she was gushing Tom Hardy. Gushing. Said she's very happy to work with him. As long as what's on the screen is fantastic. I'm totally chilled with however someone gets there. Tom is a very special person. I think he's absolutely remarkable. My support of him is genuine and heartfelt. Which, do you need to say that if your support genuine. Is genuine and heartfelt?
Yeah, I mean that most sincerely. No, I'm actually lying through my teeth. Yeah.
Questions.
Linda the Bottle says, this person has texted in again. It only says vintage port 1975. That's it.
That means
that's a vintage port then.
That's a vintage. So they're on a winner then.
So they're on a winner, but it depends how they've stored it. If they've had it in their attic or the kitchen, you know, not the best, but I'm sure they haven't put it lying down on its side and all the rest. So they would need to definitely decant this, get a muslin, because there's going to be a lot of sediment in it, and be careful. Go to your local wine merchants and ask them to help you and give them a little taste.
Yeah. And what do you pour it through muslin? Yeah, is that what you have to do?
Because there'd be so much crusty, like again, there's filtered, I know it's a horrible word, crusty on a port.
Crusty port.
So it can be filtered or unfiltered, probably unfiltered. So there will be a lot of sediment, a lot of...
Sorry, yeah. Just like you're like,
oh, you're not selling it. Really?
But like, it could be like a quarter of the bottle is undrinkable. It's that long, it's age. What do you think is going to happen?
It's really great. Just don't drink the last quarter of it. Would you use a kind of a sieve or something?
Yeah,
with
like a muslin cloth to slowly pour it. Like, this is where you see them with the candles.
I've seen that in a Colombo episode.
So, like, you need to give it a bit of love. Like, I mean, do you know, like, unless they've stored it right, it mightn't be any use. But it's like, they're at 150, 160 quid for vintage ports and stuff. They can take decades to evolve.
Okay.
Siobhan says,
go to your local merchant and ask them to taste a bit.
Siobhan says, saw the invite today in the lighthouse. Absolutely loved it. Great script, actors superb. Another text says, hopefully this will be funny because it hasn't been any decent comedy in years.
No, it's been pretty crap, yeah. And I mean, like, the reality of it is that romantic comedies are just being eaten up by the streamers and all the rest of it, which is fine because a lot of them are crap as well. But I have to say, this is one of the best comedies I've seen this year, and it's not been a great year for comedies, but this is still in all a great, great movie. Good choice as well for the person going to see a cinema during the day. That's always the best time to go to the cinemas during the day on your own, bring a coffee.
This person says Woody Allen at least made academics and intellectuals funny.
Right?
Well, in fairness, he did. That's true.
I can't agree with everything he's done, but he did that. Like, he made like corduroy blazers cool, and I appreciate him for that. Like, if nothing else. I'm not agreeing with anything he's done. He's a terrible human being, obviously, but you know, separate the air from the earth, I guess.
Paul says, in around 2015, a friend opened a bottle of 1976 port, which he said could be very good. It had been on the shelf of a local pub until a refurbishment the year before. It was, in fact, the most beautiful wine we've ever tasted.
There you are. Says so Paul. It totally depends. Like, there's ones that are declared the best vintage, and that's where the top producers would make it. So it depends on the producer. But like, ultimately, if it's a vintage port, it's the best grapes of that year.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't all make it. You know, they could be lucky having the site in the right spot to make an amazing one. But yeah, there's potential. So give it a bit of love.
Yeah. Mm. Somebody says Mobland was great, except for the false Irish accents, which appealed to the US market.
Yeah, it's very that. It's very, how do we do Yellowstone, but like not that? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, how do we get the Yellowstone audience?
You gotta start down the East End.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Like, again, I haven't watched it. I will say, I've heard from a lot of people I trust that it is not good, but to each their own. So.
Yeah. James Bond would ask for a martini, shaken, not stirred. Chris Martin would order a Himalayan kombucha with a lime spritz and 100% recycled brown paper cup, says David. Not inaccurate. Now, some disagrees with you. Radiohead wrote the best underused James Bond song called Spectre. It's available to listen to on YouTube and Spotify. It's amazing.
No, it isn't.
That's why Coldplay want to do one. They're Radiohead copycats, meow.
But who was the original Spectre?
Sam Smith. That wasn't good either.
No.
Like, I haven't heard the Radiohead one, so I can't comment.
No, and like, this is the thing. You hear the Radiohead one, you hear the Sam Smith one. They kind of sound the same. It's that kind of atonal piano, you know, very kind of
miserable. Quintessential Bond.
But this is the thing, right? This is the thing.
Someone's got him worked up now.
Or like a genre of Bond song, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, see, this is it. Like, and this is why I love the Lana Del Rey one, because it was very much, you heard it was like, that is unmistakably a Bond song. It's vampy and loud, and it's all sexy. And then we've had this thing of like, I think since Adele, really, that they've become this kind of like almost like a torch song, and it's all got to be like really kind of like downbeat and low. And like the Billie Eilish one, like, I mean, Billie Eilish is great, but I thought that song she did for No Time to Die was gack. So like, why can't we have a bit of oomph, you know, that kind of way?
Well, if it's Callum Turner, Dua Lipa's going to be doing the song,
and
so,
you know what,
banger.
She can do it. I have total faith that she could make a cracking Bond song,
and I'd say she could definitely fire a gun, so we're grand.
I would trust that woman, and I would follow her into war, no problem. 100%.
There you go.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot.
She's Albanian. Like, they know what they're doing.
Automatically make her trained in warfare.
No, but I'm just saying those people, they are strong people. They know what they're doing.
Yes,
like.
Yes, indeed. Though I think she grew up in London, really.
Whatever.
Right, so.
Why do we always end up going into my piece where you just have me crying laughing?
Something's not right.
Right, so our second wine of the day.
Okay, so this is a little interesting find, I have to say to you, because Robert Mondavi is basically the godfather of wine in California, okay? They celebrated their 60th year anniversary, and I was invited to do a virtual tour of the new winery and the whole chateau. It's amazing. So these guys have been making wine for such a long time in Napa, and they are iconic. So this is a little find, okay? So usually their wines are a little bit more on the premium side, Chardonnay, Pinot and Cabernet, and they're really, really good. They're so well known all over the world. But this wine was destined to go on an airline. Something fell through and they were going to dump the wine. So an Irish importer got their hands on it and said, we'll take that, please. Yeah. And it is selling for a fraction of what it should be in lots of places because people recognise the name Robert Mondavi. So it's called Private Selection Vint Cabernet Sauvignon from California 2023. Now this, I'm going to say this straight away, when I tasted this first, I was like, oh, that's nice. But then when I came back to it an hour later, I was like, oh my God, that has so much potential. It's amazing. So I wouldn't normally say this for this type of wine with a screw cap from California, but it needs a little bit of time, 20 minutes to an hour open.
Yeah.
Decant it if you want,
But I'm thinking, I know you're like a big Cabernet for summer wine. Yeah, barbecues, your marinated meats, your gorgeous ribeyes. You've got, it'll just hold up to so many things because there's gorgeous black fruit here, black currants, black berries. There's a hint of spice from French oak of French oak aging for 6 months, but it's so silky smooth. It's so, and it has that lovely touch of sweet ripe fruit from the sunshine in California. And for me, it is just
lovely. That really is lovely.
I know. So it's a fraction of what it should be, and they've passed that on. So people are selling it for a steal, but there's only a limited amount of bottles in the country. But literally, loads of people have it. Blackrock Cellars, Nolan's, Morton's of Ranelagh, McHugh's, O'Donovan's and Cork. I always get a Cork one in for you, Fionnuala. Always do that. Lots and Co, Latouche.
Latouche and Greystones.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, lovely. Yeah. I know
The Corkscrew, Worldwide Wines, Gibney's, Red Island and McHugh's.
Okay.
Everyone got it because they know how good it is.
Actually, on the wines coming in from outside Europe now, is the Temu tax going to affect them at all?
No, I don't think so. Like, there's duty paid on them already at $3.20 a bottle and stuff. So I think that has to be stopping the... I don't know. Put hands up. I don't know. But there's already duty paid on the wines coming in. No, can't do
it.
That's for cheap things that are kind of... It's for cheap things to stop the production and waste of money, I imagine, on crappy little plastic things and crappy clothing. Whereas wine, you know, no, they can't do that to us.
No.
But yeah, it's the 4th of July tomorrow, so that's why we're celebrating Robert Mondavi as well.
Yes, okay, good. Good reason for doing it. Casino Royale is 20 years old this November. You Know My Name by Chris Cornell is the best Bond theme ever, says Seamus.
Yeah, it is very, very good. My personal favourite, though, is Gladys Knight, License to Kill. I think that's the best Bond theme song.
Finger!
Shirley Bassey, like it's an obvious
Shirley
one.
Shirley Bassey, what's the name of the Sam Altman film you were talking about?
Artificial. It's called Artificial, yes. Keep an eye out for that.
I have a bottle of Robert Mondavi Moscato d'Oro 1995. Is it okay to drink? Is it vintage?
What?
Go on, Linda.
No.
Go on, Linda.
No.
1995.
Moscato. 1995.
Yeah.
Moscato d'Oro.
Yeah.
Bad?
What's that? Well, so I don't know if you're thrilled on their behalf or totally perplexed.
So Moscato is a wine that can make a sweet dessert wine.
Right, okay.
But no, I wouldn't have thought, no.
That'd be like septic, like you don't know.
You know, God, I don't know that wine, but if you want the person to contact me on Tasting Ireland and let me see a picture of it and all the rest. But I would think that a Moscato... Like, it's not like a Sauternes, like a Chateau Yquem, which is like one of the most famous sweet wines in the world.
But this is the kind of dessert wine we're talking about.
Yeah, but it, like, there's a, you know, a fresh Moscato would last, and some of them can be have a little bit of a spritz in it. It's meant to be drunk kind of fresh and young. It's not supposed to be aged like a, like Chateau Yquem would be a grand a bottle or a couple of hundred a bottle that is meant to age for a number of years. Here's me. Using my hands here. But send me a picture at Wine Tasting Ireland and I'll have a look, but I would not have thought so. So Robert Mondavi are amazing. Like, the whole range of theirs is available in Wine Online. The premium ones are amazing. So
Right, let's move on to our second movie of the day. It is Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie. Here's a clip.
We need something that that can cut through. Like, we're going to be quite up high and I think they're going to have a safety harness on us or something like that. And would snippers like this, would they be able to cut through like a kind of harness?
No, you, what are you trying to do though? That's my question.
So here's, so we are gonna be up on the CN Tower in one of the, in on the edge walk, where we're wearing the, I think they put a safety vest on you and we need something that can like cut through the rope or the cable on it. Do you know what I mean?
You can, but here's the thing, you would shock yourself because if you cut through live wire, you'll get electrocuted.
But the, I'm not cutting through electricity, I'm cutting through fabric, I'm not cutting through a live wire.
What happens if we're not even allowed in the security with
you
these?
You will be actually caught.
Right. Okay.
So the thing about Nirvana, the band, the show, and the film as well is the fact that like it's kind of, it's done like a hidden camera show.
Yeah.
In that, in that
the premise of it is that Matt Johnson and Jay McCarter are these two musicians in Toronto, kind of stoner slackers, but they have this dream that they're going to play a gig in this small little venue called the Rivoli. And each episode they come up with increasingly madcap, completely stupid schemes in order to get inside the building. But this time in the film, it's set in our time. They've been spent 17 years trying to get into the Rivoli and it still hasn't happened yet. And they create a time machine in an RV that is powered by this like Canadian drink called Orbitz, which isn't even in production anymore. And they somehow manage to travel back to 2008 where they meet their younger selves. Now, when you watch it, I mean, I was watching it with my wife the other night and like she, I'm obviously obsessed with the show or whatever, but she kind of watched it in passing and she was still able to get some of the jokes in it.
Okay.
Because funny is funny, number one, but number two, you can very clearly see that like when Matt and Jay are like kind of doing their bits or whatever and just someone happens to walk by, it's all improvised. None of it is scripted. They will literally turn to that person and be like, hey, listen, can you hold this like bar here? I'm going to jump up here. And you can see them just being like, what the hell is going on here? Like that bit there, if you'd let that clip play a little bit longer, the guy, I can't, this is why you can't like write some jokes. The guy's like, look, listen, I'm a libertarian, so if you want to cut through wire, that's your business. And the guy, you can actually see Matt and Jay being like, oh, of course, that's so good that you just said that. Like, there's so many scenes in the original series and in the film as well where you can see Matt and Jay lighting up as just some randomer is just giving them comedy gold unscripted, you know? And like Matt Johnson himself, now he's kind of become a bit of a director of note because he did, it was a film a couple of years ago called BlackBerry, which was about the kind of the rise and fall of BlackBerry phones. It was fantastically well done. He's now going to do the Anthony Bourdain biopic Tony.
Okay.
With Anthony Cessna from The Hangovers and stuff like that.
Holdovers.
Oh, The Holdover. Sorry, what did I say? The
Hangovers.
Jesus. Very
different franchise.
Very different film. But yeah, this is really fun, like really kind of goofy, not your mainstream kind of comedy, but still very, very funny, very, very endearing. I love this. And like, again, it is a miracle that this even made it out because they had to use like fair use policy to get through like the music. Like, because the film is basically a rip off of Back to the Future. So much so that they actually used the music from Back to the Future and had the little time machine thing where it goes doot doot and then they have to get to 88 miles an hour. And yeah, you know, when they turn the language and they have the flux capacitor and the blah, 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 blah. they had to invoke fair use policies, which is like essentially you can use music or film or television items in a film as long as you are parodying that thing. It's a legal precedent that they have in the US. And there's literally a scene in this film where Matt Johnson turns straight to the camera, looks down the lens, and he goes, if you're seeing this film, it's a miracle that we've even managed to get it this far. Count your lucky stars that you're seeing this in a cinema. And then goes back into the scene, like, because again, it's like they themselves knew that there was like a snowball's chance in hell that this was ever going to make it out. Because again, Universal Studios and Alan Silvestri and Robert Zemeckis, the creators of Back to the Future, could have just as easily slapped a lawsuit on them and said, you've basically ripped off my film. But again, I love this. It's not going to be in a lot of cinemas. This will be in select cinemas. I think only The Lighthouse has it. Maybe Triskel Arts Centre has it. But if you can watch this, it's fantastic. I highly, highly recommend it. But again, it would help if you had seen the original series. That's pretty hard to come by. But I think you can come into this cold and still find it funny. So
yeah, yeah. You're getting a lot of messages today.
Everyone reading through their cupboards.
Can your wine expert please confirm? Actually, before that, the second wine is Robert Mondavi. Is that correct?
Robert Mondavi. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to clarify for a lot of listeners who thought you said Robert Mugabe, which is not a well-known wine producer. No. Mugabe wasn't. That's for sure. Can your wine expert please confirm the wine she recommended is at Robert Mondavi Vint Private Selection Cabernet Sauvignon 2023.
Correct.
Well done. They probably want a prize
because there won't be any other one ever again. Do you know this is nowhere else?
Yeah,
this was gone and never to be back.
Yeah,
is the thing.
So this will be worth like this will be worth a bomb in a couple of years.
No, it won't be worth a bomb in a couple of years. It's made to be.
All right, relax.
If I hear now in 10 years' time that someone's found a bottle of Robert Mondavi Vint in their cupboard from 10 years
how
ago,
much is it worth?
Oh my God, we'll be here in 4 years.
It's made to be drunk and enjoyed. Just open it up an hour beforehand or decant it and have it with your gorgeous juicy barbecues this summer.
Yeah, I'm actually, you were saying barbecues earlier.
Or keep
earlier.
Them
I think
for the winter time. Keep it for the winter and it's a winter warmer in a glass 100%. But it's going to be gone. There's only something like 10,000 bottles in the country and that's it.
1982, Leoville Barton. 1982, Leoville Barton. Should be good? Yes, no.
Yes.
Have four 35.5 sale bottles.
Wow, yes.
Yeah.
Like, it's a first-grow Bordeaux. Like, that's the, yes, 100%. Again, I hope they've stored it correctly. So that's half bottles of
yeah.
it. 100%. Like, that's 100 and something a bottle. And
wow.
it's the first growth.
Wow.
And yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'd like to welcome all
of you. I can call over and just make
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, she can, yeah.
just get a little
again,
yeah.
again, I'd recommend going to your local wine merchant and say, have you got a Coravan? Can we taste this together, please? Give them a taste.
What's
and
a Coravan?
So a Coravan's a device where you can stick a needle in.
It's made by a surgeon.
And they stick they pierce through the cork without opening the bottle and then you just taste it.
Oh.
But yeah, like they are top wines. So,
wow,
yeah.
wow. Okay, yeah. well, thanks everybody who texted in there, especially all our ABC One listeners in Leafy, wherever the hell they're living. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Linda, Brian and Fionnuala.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks in at mine.
The martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.